Long Beach, welcome back to GazetteSports.com, the home of everything sports. Here in the LBC, we bring you what you need to know once a week here at Sports Night, our weekly internet talk radio show. And by we, I mean the royal we. Myself, JJ Fiddler, to my left.
Mike Garabasio, I think that's actually just the regular we.
And to my right.
I'm no one's regular we. I'm Tyler Hendrickson over here on the right.
We couldn't do anything at GazetteSports.com, the Gazette newspapers, the grunting Gazette sports section, or this show without the fine list of sponsors.
Of course, nothing we do at GazetteSports.com would be possible without the fine folks at Naples Rib Company and the Naples Island Car Wash. McCarty's Jewelry, here for you since 1932, and of course, the Performance Vein Institute of Los Alamitos. But that's not all.
That is certainly not all. Don't forget Friedman's Appliances, lacing up your entire home with a lot of fresh-looking new materials. And Powerhouse Fitness, lacing your body up with a lot of fresh-looking moving parts. And then, of course, the Long Beach Cyclery, where you can get out on your cycle and go around and ride around our fair city and hear a lot of noises.
You can add yourself or your business to that list of exclusive sponsors by hitting the contact button at GazetteSports.com. Obviously, you can get involved in many different ways at GazetteSports.com, which we will run down as we get deeper into this. Comment section, any story, leave your opinion. We might read it on this. And also, on Thursday, get to your local newsstand, because the Grunting Gazette is out there, and the B section, the full sports section, is there as well for your reading pleasure. Now, here are the rules. This is Sports Night. We come to you once a week, like we said. We run down what you need to know about Long Beach sports. We pick three specific headlines of issues that we think we need to get to. This week, we're going to get to some local teams that you might not know about who have a chance to win the CIF championship, and we will also talk about what's wrong with LBCC football. But first things first,
long conversation.
It would not be a sports talk radio show this week if we weren't talking about the men who wear the stripes. And no, I'm not talking about the Yankees. I'm talking about the Zebras, the officials in all walks of football, from high school to college to the NFL. You cannot talk sports right now without talking about those guys who, I mean, it's not just the flags that they throw or don't throw. It's the control of a game that I think everybody is really just frustrated with right now.
And obviously everyone's complaining about the NFL. We're certainly going to make fun of those guys for a couple minutes. But we do have a local sports story to talk about that with. The Cabrillo Jaguars have been heavily impacted by officials, and we will be bringing that up as I think just a kind of a good example of what the Long Beach kids we cover are up against.
You know, this all started with the Jordan Panthers and a game that you were at, Tyler.
Right. It was just one of those games that it just
It all started locally, I should say.
Exactly. Yeah, it was on the north side. They were playing Santa Margarita, defending Pac-5 and state champions, and there was just, you know, some questionable things happening. Eventually, John Ross, the defending co-offensive player of the year in the Moore League, was ejected from the game for two personal fouls. Now, later, the official apologized, said it was the wrong call, shouldn't have done it, but he was still ejected from the game and missed a majority of that contest. Obviously, that greatly affects Jordan's chances of playing. And there was just a lot of, there were flags, late flags, there was no control of the game. The whistle didn't blow to end plays.
Video clips of a guy getting stuck up in a pile and no whistle's blown.
Sometimes the whistle literally
the referee takes the ball from the player and puts it down on the ground. The play's still going.
Yeah, I think that's a safety issue, and a lot of the coaches were complaining about that because, you know, kids are taught play to the whistle, and if they don't hear one, and you know, they're going to get penalties against them, and I don't think that's fair.
That wasn't the only game either. Next week they go to Upland, and they've got a ridiculous onside kick call go against them.
Right. I mean, that's a game that they're in against a very good Upland team. It's a very lovely setting up there, and they, you know, they kick the ball straight into the ground. Recover the onside kick. Rasheed Johnson made a great play to one-hand rebound that, as if he were out on the basketball court. But they just totally missed the call. They thought that it was, I guess, pooched up into the air, said it didn't touch the ground. Obviously, head coach Thomas Barnes was beside himself. And then later, that exact same onside kick was allowed. But, you know, that's a momentum changer, because Upland goes down and scores on that first drive. And if Jordan has the ball right there, they make it a one-score game. Everything changes.
Don't skip over that. They did it again, and it was allowed, as if the referees learned from their mistake and then made sure they got it right on the second time. I saw something very similar to that at the St. Anthony game on Friday, where St. Anthony was rolled up in one of those tight wing tee sets, and they shifted their three wing backs all at once. They did it so crisply that the referee threw the flag thinking that it was a procedural penalty when they had actually not gone down and set at the offensive line, which means you can move around. They did it the very next play. No flag. It's right. The utter lack of knowledge when it comes to the rules that you expect referees to have. I do think we need to clear the air. We got an email about this. I heard a couple people say it on the sidelines. These are not replacement referees at the high school level, people.
No.
This tends to happen. So, you know, sometimes you run into bad calls or whatever. We understand it's an amateur sport, so you're going to get amateur officials. That's the deal. But these are not – they're not rolling referees up the ladder,
right,
which then leaves high school and peewee football with guys who don't know what's going on.
Well, it's not a trickle-down effect.
Well, what happened is that – I mean, there are a couple high school referees
high
working
school
in
Reaganomics.
There are a couple high school referees working in the NFL, and I think people heard that on the first Thursday night broadcast and assumed that they came out of Southern California. That's not the case. It is worth saying – I mean, I think, JJ, in the case of your game – I kind of think that's an understandable mistake to make, and as long as you don't make it a couple times. I mean, you expect people to make mistakes, and by and large, Southern California CIF referees compared to just about anywhere else that I've seen in high school football, far and away the class of the country in terms of high school refs. Because like you said, I mean, these guys don't get paid that much a game, and they have to go to – you essentially have to get a certificate, like a teaching credential, in order to be cleared to do it. I think generally they do a very good job. Sometimes when teams travel outside of L.A. County, we see things go a little bit differently. It gets us a little bit frustrated.
Here's where the crux of the argument really comes in. And this is really – I don't think we would have even brought up the other, you know, the other situations if
no,
it weren't for this
sort of
game.
Things that happened that didn't necessarily affect the outcome of the game. Because I don't think Jordan was going to be Upland. And certainly St. Anthony won the game.
It certainly would have been an upset.
Result.
It certainly would have been an upset. So, but this is the one that really changed it, along with just the running theme of – on the national level, but the Cabrillo-Cypress game, I mean, we put a story up about it, so just let them know. Mike.
But it's worth saying that this is not the first time we've seen a Long Beach team get really kind of hosed by an officiating crew when they leave the city. JJ and I covered a Wilson, I believe it was a semifinal water polo game 2 or 3 years ago, in which Wilson players were literally excluded 5-1 against their Orange County opponent. The game was being played in Irvine. And to the extent that a Wilson assistant coach took a red card at the end of the game for yelling at the official so much. And, you and I had a conversation at the time, actually, that I think is worth revisiting just for a second before we talk about Cabrillo. If you're a coach and you know, because we talked to Long Beach coaches, this is all off the record, I'm not putting anyone's name on this, just about anyone will say, well, you know what happens to us when we go to Orange County, we're a Long Beach team. Now, if you're a coach and you know that, I mean, what's your responsibility there? Because I didn't have any problem with the Wilson assistant coach taking a red card. To me, if parents have trusted me with their kids, it's my job to protect them. And if I feel like the authorities are doing something detrimental to the kids, not in the realm of a missed false start call or something like that, but that there's a clear bias, I kind of feel it's a coach's job to try and push that issue a little bit. We don't get upset at coaches who come to us to talk about those things because we know that they're real. We've seen it and we've heard from people who know officials who've retired who've talked about it. I mean, I think it's a real problem, and for whatever reason, it hits our kids, I think, a little bit more than it hits other kids.
Well, and sometimes it is just one of those things that people say. Like, sometimes people just get aggravated at the officials because their team lost, but there are
which
other
times. Which
is why
it's always dangerous to talk about it.
Exactly.
But, you know, when we went
it gets
to Sacramento,
watered down a little bit.
We went to Sacramento. This is, you know, anytime we travel with Poly Football specifically out of the area, that's when we see the officials where it's like, wow, these guys are really bad. But when we went up to Sacramento for the Poly Grant game last year, there was a blatantly bad forward pass called as a fumble that was a good 2 yards forward. And we had the clear video evidence of that. We're standing right where the quarterback was looking at him, and the ball comes in 2.5 yards to the right of the camera. Now, when we talked to the announcer who was up there, he said, yeah, it's been like that the whole weekend because it was like an invitational where they brought SoCal teams up. He said all the SoCal teams were getting screwed by these Sacramento refs because they're not their refs. They're reffing the home teams. That's just not, to me, that's anti-sport.
Right.
Well, speaking of the fact that we have video evidence, we have the video evidence of this Cabrillo-Cypress game that got Jason Brown and two of his best offensive linemen suspended for their game against Jordan. Incredibly, the Jaguars come out with that upset victory against the Panthers opening weekend of more league play, but they were doing it without three very important pieces to their team, and you have to go look at the video because none of them make any sense.
As we're recording, ESPN is showing, for I believe the 4 millionth time, the end of the Monday Night Football game between the Packers and the Seahawks, trying to officially prove once and for all, obviously, that it was an interception by the Packers. We have the high school equivalent of that videotape from the Cabrillo Cypress game, where we've got video of the two player ejections, neither of which to me seem warranted from the clips that we saw. And then this was a game where Cabrillo had 255 yards in penalties, and that's from those he registered. That's not a coach exaggeration. 20 penalties for 255 yards, two Cypresses, 25 yards in penalties.
25 yards in penalties.
So, and then referees will tell you, there's no excuse for a discrepancy like that.
They do what they call evening the book. So if you've ever seen a high school basketball game where a team starts off with five quick fouls, the refs are going to call the game lighter on that team, and they're going to call it tighter on the other team to try and even the book. And a referee doesn't want a 225 to a 25-yard penalty discrepancy.
Right. I've literally had a ref in the stands who wasn't working the game, who was just off duty.
We talked to the signers, yeah. And we talked to the over. Yeah, yeah.
They've told me that they intentionally call fouls against the right. team that's lower on the foul count to make it even, because the law of averages say that it should be even. So right. that type of discrepancy, 10-1,
yeah.
absurd. And every referee knew that they should have been calling penalties, either stop calling penalties on Cabrillo or started right. on Cypress, and they didn't, because there must have been some bias going on in that game. That's what the video kind of showed us.
We actually sat down and watched a video with every penalty thrown, and there are a lot of phantom hold calls. The one that we put up, the third clip, that I think best sums up how weird a night it was, is that Jalen Warfield, the quarterback for Cabrillo at the time, is running. He's going right. He lines up his safety, and he just flat out runs the safety over. Safety still makes the tackle, but he gets knocked backwards. And they threw a 15-yard penalty on Warfield, on the quarterback, for being,
who had the ball.
The coach was told he was being, quote, too aggressive. So, to me, I've never heard of anything like that in my life. Now, this is one of the things that's so tricky about officiating. It's all so subjective. Someone today, in response to the 20 comments we got saying these calls are terrible, just left a comment and said, well, yeah, didn't you see he lowered his helmet? You're not allowed to lower your helmet. You can't initiate helmet-to-helmet contact regardless of who has the ball. So, no 100 people are going to see these issues the same way. And obviously when you bring thousands, or in the case of the NFL, millions of people in, certainly no one's going to see it the wrong way.
Yeah, and in the case of the NFL, we've got more of a situation of the fact that these referees, not any fault of their own, are just basically in over their heads. And I believe everything possible has been said about this, except these two referees who are in the end zone in this Packers-Seahawks game run in on that play. They come from two completely different angles. I'm sure they saw completely different things. But instead of looking at each other, knowing that they needed to make the call, talking to each other and figuring right. out and then getting it a certain amount of right, they just put their hands up. Now, I got to give...
Well, one of them did.
I got to give Shark credit. Well, both of their hands went up. One was waving their hands and one just had their hands
dead ball. The back judge signals dead ball to say the play's over, stop fighting each other, and to bring the referees in. But the call
they should have made is a touchback, because that's what it is.
Right, but by signaling dead ball, the back judge is saying, let's get together and figure out what this is. And then he made the right call. You know, dead ball, let's talk about this, then we'll rule it a touchback. Because I understand, important play, you want to bring everyone in and see if anyone had a clear view. But the side judge, as you mentioned, throws his hands in the air like he just don't care.
I think he read that the other referee was putting his hands up, and he thought he was signaling touchdown, so he wanted to back his boy up. We're not going to solve this, all right? We're not going to solve this. Actually, we just read on ESPN that the NFL and the referees are very close to figuring this thing out. There's a slim possibility that they'll be back this week. So two things. The first is...
Your gambling money will be safe once again.
We're not going to solve this. At the high school, at the college, at the NFL level, there is always going to be a level of human error in all of sport. I mean, obviously, it's easier to have more effect on a soccer game than it would be to have in a football game, but that's a whole different conversation. So we're not going to solve this. What I do want to say, though, is talk it out. You know, people do get frustrated with the fact that games last a little bit longer. I mean, that game was 3 hours at St. Anthony on Friday. But you know what? If you got every single call right, I'll stand there for 5 hours. Just get it right. Just talk about it. Make sure you can get it as right as you possibly can, and figure it out.
Yeah, and if you throw that flag for illegal procedure or whatever, and then the coach explains to you, no, my linemen weren't down, don't have the ego that says, I already threw the flag, I have to call the penalty. If they explain to you that it was a legal move, just say, all right, you got me, you're right, and then pick the flag.
And you've got four other referees out there.
Exactly.
Who might be like, oh, I see that you got that wrong.
That's why volleyball officials, to me, are always my favorite. It's certainly much more cut and dried for them, but
Yeah, you can replay.
But for the most part...
You can put your two thumbs in the air and be like, let's do that one over again.
You can replay almost in any sport. The thing with maybe the exception of soccer, is the thing that I like about volleyball officials is they're not afraid to do that. You know, they're not afraid to look at the coach and go, you're right. It happened once in the Lakewood-Wilson match I covered yesterday. Uh-huh. It should have happened in, say, you know, we did an LBCC football game earlier this year where the officials were yelling at each other. And, like, one guy on the LBCC sidelines apologizing for the back judge is like, yeah, that guy's not normally a part of our crew. I don't know what he's doing. You know, just, JJ, you're right. Get a consensus. Be a team. Just like a football team. You know, show some leadership. Show some character. Get together. And even if you don't make the right call, to me, if the effort is there, at least, I understand the human element. And all that
Absolutely.
Stuff, until it's all run by computer chips, which
Absolutely.
Is inevitable.
Inevitable.
But let's also point out that football has never been more difficult to officiate. It's faster, it's
yep.
bigger, it's stronger,
yep.
all that other kind
oh,
of stuff.
And that has trickled down. That is true of the high school.
That level. Is true at every level. And so it's harder now to make the proper call and officiate, especially with all the tricky new wrinkles that people are trying to put in to confuse the defense. It also confuses the officials. There are certain calls that there's no excuse to get wrong, but at the same time, bear with them. They're not replacement
right.
refs at the high
These
school
These are the
level.
Real refs. You're not getting rid of them, so stop complaining quite so much. You know, give them a chance.
Yeah, but in most cases, they're trying their best, and it's a difficult job, but sometimes when things get a little fishy, obviously we'll be here to report about it and make sure that there's some sort of accountability.
One final thing, when the referees come back for their first weekend back at the NFL... People have to do something.
Standing ovation.
Right?
Oh, without question.
Now,
welcome them back.
Now,
get there
now,
early.
There's not many opportunities
Hit your local
to do
locker.
That. There's not many opportunities to do that in a football game. The referees aren't standing out there. They don't really get announced or anything like that. They're not running out of the tunnel doing the Ray Lewis. But
Ed Hockley do a great Ray Lewis.
At some point, I think everybody, football fans, sports fans, people who are a fan of fairness, needs to get together on Facebook, on Twitter, whatever it is, and be like, hey, let's all show up early. And clap for these guys when they come out of the tunnel. And then immediately boo the first bad call.
And I think there's when they come out of the tunnel and the first time Ed Hockley switches his microphone on to make a call, I think let him have it there again too. Two standing ovations for the officials and then right back to where we left him.
I would love people to go to Foot Locker and steal an associate's uniform and just have like
people dressed up wearing officials
throngs
uniforms.
Of people just wearing the black and white stripes. That'd
That's
be
a
awesome.
Good one too.
Ed Hockley made one of the most infamous bad calls and it cost my Chargers a victory. And the way he handled it like a man, I can't wait to see the Hawk back on the field again. Can't wait.
If you want this show delivered to you every week, get on your iTunes and subscribe. Type Sports Night,
one word,
in the upper right-hand corner and make sure this show is delivered straight to you every week.
We've mentioned several times on this show and on the website and on the newspaper and in person if you've seen us that it has been a difficult fall to cover sports in Long Beach.
It's real tough.
It's pretty tough. Football teams kind of flagging. Lakewood actually just moved up to have a nicer record because of a forfeit from St. John Bosco. But
doesn't feel like a win.
About
that didn't feel like a win.
That's kind of the good news that we have been getting so far. With the exception of St. Anthony, who we covered last week, they are now 4-1. JJ was at that game. Go Saints.
Oh, yeah, go Saints.
It's kind of been a tough fall, and so what some people have asked me about is, are we going to get any rings this fall? Is that a possibility at all? So that was something that we wanted to discuss is, you're right, obviously people are still going to pay more attention to football than some of the low, quote-unquote lower-tier sports.
As always.
Because it's football. We understand that, obviously. 8,000 people see football games. They don't show up to see anything else in those numbers.
I wanted you to pull one really good right there. Like,
I mean, I was going to, and then I realized I could literally name every other thing.
Right? Exactly.
It's Grand Prix and football are pretty much it. But what we wanted to talk about was we do actually have some kind of highly ranked teams from other sports that are not necessarily getting as much attention. So we wanted to shout those out real quick. If you look at the Division III, as I know you do, the Division III Girls Tennis CIF rankings.
I got them on my fridge every week.
As I know you do.
The Wilson Bruins are currently actually ranked number 2. So CIF coaches in Division III feel that Wilson is going to make it to the championship game.
Wilson and their country club sports just can't be stopped right now.
You're absolutely right. They completely handle their business. The water polo team, who's ranked number 5 this week, they moved up a spot. They just upset number 3 Los Al So they could be moving up into one of those seeded positions next week. That's going to be really exciting.
That water polo team plays at Belmont. And if you want an awesome scene in a historic place watching a good team, boys water polo at Belmont Shore is pretty much a 3-for-3.
Unless you're looking for defense.
Fair play.
And who really is looking for defense? I mean, come on. Score goals.
If you'd rather get some sun, which we're actually going to go do in right about an hour and a half here, more league cross-country season officially underway as of Wednesday, but these kids run pretty much every weekend at different meets. There are 3 league mates in the regular season.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. Today we're starting at El Dorado. They still have the Discovery Wells Signal Hill Park as well as Hartwell Park. So we're excited about those. In cross-country, Pauley's boys cross-country team in Division 1 is ranked number 6 this week in CIF. And in the state, they moved down from number 8 to number 10. So that's a team that's expected to get to the state meet, which in cross-country, where there's a million entrants and only one race winner and only one team winner, just getting to the CIF finals meet and to the state meet, these are legitimate, real accomplishments in and of themselves. They're looking like they're going to have a great season this year as well, with Miguel Bautista, one of the most secretly dominant runners or athletes in any sport that we've had in Long Beach.
And these are not solo dolo runs. These kids go out there as a team. They run as a team. You want to see that in action, you can check out some of our coverage from last year where we show you, oh, they know that this kid's going to come out fast, so you got to hang back, let him come back to the pack, and then run with your teammates. It's going to be a really interesting season in cross-country, actually, and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I think the race for second, third, and fourth should be pretty competitive right now. Actually, things could go a little bit different. Lakewood looks like they've stepped their cross-country program up. Pauley looks like they've more or less got a stranglehold on the top spots as they have for, I believe, 8 years running now. But it should be very exciting, especially once we get into these postseason races. Where we just the same thing with tennis. People aren't necessarily going to go watch a Wilson-Jordan tennis match. But when Wilson gets into that playoff bracket in about a month here, it could be very interesting, especially if they make it as far as people think they're going to.
You know what high school tennis needs? A scoreboard.
I mean, it would be nice for sports writers.
And not just sports writers, but I think anybody who's there watching, unless you're a family member or a very close friend of one specific player, they do their doubles, they do their singles, that all happens at the same time. They've got right. No choice. So there's no way to go check on one match and then another match. So really, you are only able to watch an individual if you want to see a certain game. Because within that one game, there are 7 different individuals participating all at once.
You're absolutely right, and it's kind of the same thing with cross country. It is, I think, one of the most underrated spectator sports out there, but it's not set up like a spectator sport. No one announces the boys' frosh soft race is starting now. You have to know what order they go in. If you know when the varsity races are, it's great because you're out there with all 7 Moore League high schools, the fans supporting and talking to each other. Everyone knows each other. A lot of familiar faces from other sports out there. We always have a blast. But you do kind of have to know what's going on a little bit just to be able to enjoy it. Once you do, it's fantastic. It's a great time.
Oh, Eldo is just absolutely picturesque, and it's one big loop, so it's huge, obviously. It's bigger than a track would be, but you can see the runners at all times.
Right.
Which is
so
entertaining.
You stand in the middle and kind of swivel around in a circle and watch them go around.
Over at Signal Hill, it's a great track, a great race.
A little harder to watch, though.
Like we mentioned, Hill, yeah. But yeah, once they get up on top there, you're either going to have to run up that hill with them or wait until they come back down.
The Pauley coaches always enjoy making fun of me as I try and run around and get video at Signal Hill because it's like, I am not conditioned for that circumstance whatsoever.
So difficult to show up and be a spectator for those sports, but obviously every day you can come to gazettesports.com and get your Nikes or your track shoes.
Get your New Balance laced up.
Don't be shy. Add us to your social network. Find us on the book, Facebook, Long Beach Gazette Sports, and of course, getting our tweet game proper on Twitter at Gazette Sports and at Gazette's Updates. We have got you covered. We've mentioned how much the Moore League has struggled this year thus far, but looking at the only college football team in Long Beach, it is not getting much better. The LBCC Vikings have really limped out to an 0-4 start. Things are not looking up right now, especially in their tougher conference this year. They went to a bowl game and won their conference last year. Do not see that happening this season. Guys, it is getting ugly at Vets on Saturdays. What in the world is going on is what people want to know.
Punished for turning that season around last year because they started last season exactly like they started this season. And then they turned around and made a bowl game. And they were like, okay, now you have to go do that first half of the season twice.
Yeah, but they don't have the offense this year that they had last year with Ryan Craighead, Trayvon Payne, Sean Morris, Willie Bobbitt, and Mike Evans. They don't have those guys, those offensive targets to go to, it doesn't appear. So it's brutal.
To answer the question of what's happening, shall we start with the politically correct explanations and then move into larger issues, perhaps? Because and from a politically correct perspective, they've had a series of injuries, particularly on the offensive line, which was meant to be the strength of the team this year. They were going to be an inside power team. When you have three of your original starting five linemen miss at least one game, obviously that's a little bit difficult to do.
And inside power team at the JUCO football level is laughable.
Well, I think they possibly have the personnel to get it done. I don't know that they have the running back to get it done, but I do think they were, at the very least, they're playing to their strength.
Fair enough.
On the offensive line.
Yeah, they got the size up front if it's healthy. Yeah.
But we do have to agree that of all the teams that have come into play LBCC over the last few years that we've seen that have looked good, they're all in that shotgun spread formation.
Pistol like LBCC has previously run. So in any
event, this is JUCO football. It's spread out. It's five wide. It's 50 points a game.
I hate the pistol, by the way. Am I the only one who hates the pistol?
I love the pistol.
Really?
What do you hate about the pistol?
I don't know. It just seems like a waste of formation. It doesn't seem like it gains anybody an advantage on offense.
Well, no, gains you a huge advantage.
It gains you huge. You get the running start. Yeah, you're in the shotgun, but you also get the running back that can get the forward start, and it doesn't give away what direction they're going to run.
Yeah, it's a lack of action though. It's a lack of play action. With more movement in the backfield,
you can
comes
have play
more
action.
But it's just like you could, but it's just like having. I mean, you could say the same thing about a shotgun spread, but you gain more running options in the pistol
because when you either hand off to the running back or fake to the running back, they have a full head of steam. Whereas in the shotgun, they're just coming from a standstill.
Anyway, I'm biased about the pistol because it was invented at LBCC before UNLV and everyone else stole it. So
either way, pistol grip pump on the field at all times. That's all I'll say.
We mentioned that they've struggled out of the gate. 52-21, 51-14, 34-12 in what sadly is looking like a relative barn burner for this season. And then just last week, 59-7, we got multiple reports of kids kind of openly rebelling on the sidelines, cussing out coaches. Kind of a bad scene over there. The average of those scores, in case you're wondering, is 49 to 13.5.
That's tough.
That's not how you want to start your season
and go
to conference play.
As they say, hang with them.
Very
things
difficult.
Do not get any easier taking on a very, very good Riverside team at Vets.
They've
on
reconferenced
Saturday.
This year. They're in a powerhouse conference. They went essentially from the Big West to the Pac-12. And it is not a great thing for a team that is struggling the way they are. 0-10, a very real possibility. So we've talked about injuries. We talked about the fact that they couldn't control what conference they got put in. That just sort of got put upon them. But now, I mean, where do we start here? You know, we've had people on the website calling for the firing of head coach Mike Risebig. We never obviously advocate firing a coach that we work with. We've got a good relationship with Coach Risebig. But something's got to happen. I mean, is it recruiting? Is it what do we put this on?
Well, it's rough to see like a local star like Jesse Scroggins, one of the guys that puts it on him. You know,
Richardson in the. I mean, you have Lakewood, Pauly's best player in the last 5 years and Lakewood's best player ever
at El Camino
beating up on OBCC 59-7. So recruiting is a good place to start. You're right.
You can also put some of that on the fact that kids like to get out of their hometown for college. That happens sometimes, but you have to build a fence. You've got to get the best
at least
JUCO
the JC
talent
at least at
every
JC
single
level.
Year in your city. You have to keep that. Even if it is just the one or two top guys and you don't get the other dudes, you've got to get the top guys because it is a trickle-down effect. How did we mention trickle-down effect twice in one episode, by the way? Anyways.
It's an election year.
With JUCO football,
same
though,
rhetoric.
With JUCO
40
football,
days away.
Though, I feel like that coaching staff right now is trying to put together a cohesive, good team unit. And the reason why they're failing is because that's not successful in today's JUCO football scene. Team units are important. Absolutely. Absolutely. You need to have chemistry. Absolutely. But more important than that is to get the kids who are going to get the scholarships, who are going to go to the next level, so that they can go back and tell the people who are the next group. You only get them for 2 years. You go back and tell the next group, hey, you go to this school, you'll get your shine, you'll get your scully, because that's all anybody cares about at the LBCC, at the JUCO, at that level of football right now. That's just the way that it is.
And it did not used to be that way. This is a team that's won 5 national championships, and they won them with teams. Now, 94, Larry Risebig's year, father of the current head coach, you could kind of look at that as a team that they paid for, that they put together. He was the first full-time employee to coach that team in a while, and he did a hell of a job. They got good coaches. It shows how good the players are that, like, half of the current assistant coaches were either coaches on that team or players on it. But the previous times they won, and we're talking about 40, 50 years ago, these were teams that were all Long Beach kids that were either for monetary or grade reasons not able to go to the D1 level, who wanted to go and win more championships for Long Beach.
And built that fence.
They built the fence. Well, I mean, to be honest with you, they didn't even really necessarily do something. So when I talked to D. Andrews about this, he literally said, we'd never heard of anything like a Cerritos or an El Camino. Those are his actual words. Uh-huh. It was Long Beach. We were from Long Beach. We played in Long Beach for Long Beach. Yeah. It literally never even occurred to them that, you know, you didn't have to build a fence because they just came over anyway.
Right, because that's the city they were from, so they went to the college in that city.
Right, so now on a personal level, that bothers us. We'd still like to see it be that way.
Yeah.
You do hear some complaints, maybe some legitimate, some not, from people about the reasons they don't want to be a part of their current team. We don't necessarily need to go into too much he said, she said stuff, but it is certainly notable that the big talent that goes JC from the high schools is not at LBCC. It's difficult not to notice that, especially when they're actively beating LBCC like happened with El Camino.
Right, and I know I talked to Coach Reisbig at the beginning of the season, and they're hoping that some of the upgrades that they've made at Vet, certainly the weight room that's now great quality, and it's a beautiful weight room, and that could be a thing to entice a kid to say, hey, we're committed to winning, we just built this weight room, stay in Long Beach, play for your city, and obviously you'll still get some Gazette sports highlights, which I know are very popular with the local athletes. Because even athletes at schools that we don't cover are requesting our presence.
That's right.
So we also need more former Vikings to end up on NFL's top 10 at the end of the week.
Like, well, Stephen, we got Burton. One. We did get the one.
Yeah.
Stephen Burton, who made a circus catch for his first NFL touchdown off of a deflection. He plays for the Vikings now.
You probably saw that play and didn't know that he was a former LBCC Viking. That's what's wrong with LBCC football.
Yeah, well, it's just difficult. There used to be so much pride in everything. Now you go to the games. I do think they should move the start times later. I think that's a definitive must.
Football always looks better under the lights.
That was great success.
It's just the attendance was so much better. And it was an emergency move, so they only gave people about 24 hours notice they were moving it 5 hours later, and it was still double the attendance of any game we've seen since they've been playing.
And it's not like they're playing teams that can't make the drive. People come to these games. OCC showed up at that game, like you said, Mike, with very little pre-knowledge that it was going to get moved to 6 o'clock. People show up for the other teams. It's just that LBCC needs to get some momentum.
Right, momentum's a good word. I don't know where that starts, if it starts with some kind of a shakeup, if it starts with just the general process of recruiting better players or what. But certainly in this, I will add this on. It's difficult right now with the state of the California budget when all JC sports are kind of always on the chopping block. It's difficult when you can't point to your football team, which is a big chunk of that budget, and say, well, it's doing these positive things for us. It's raising school spirit, or it's getting a lot of kids scholarships. I think that makes it even more imperative that things get turned around.
I'm not going to throw a name out here, but I've just got this idea of what we're talking about, momentum and city pride and things of that nature. What if a successful high school football coach were to then move up a level and go to LBCC and coach that? Would that be – do you think that would be a thing where
– You mean like Jerry Jason did when they won their last conference championship?
Well, I wasn't going to say any names. I'm not going to ask anybody to take somebody else's job.
It has happened before,
Do you think that would entice local kids to say, hey – I respect that coach. I played against that coach. I played for that coach. I know that coach.
I'm going to stay. I think if you look at the influx of poly talent they had when they hired Jerry Jaso, actually they did the same thing in 1939 when they hired Orion Landreth from Poly, and he started a poly pipeline that went for a good 20 years and won them 3 national championships. That's always an attractive way to go. If there is a real knock on Mike Reisbig, I think there is sometimes a problem like that. He wasn't saying anything for a while, but being mostly a JC guy, you don't necessarily have that pull at a specific high school.
Well, if it gets better, if it gets worse, it will be very interesting to see either way. That's it, baby. It's in the bag. Another episode of Sports Night here at GazetteSports.com. We've mentioned it a couple times every week. We come to you with this show, so you've got to get involved multiple different ways. Twitter, Facebook, the discussion on the comment sections. I mean, this is your show. This is your city. These are your sports. So get involved. Couldn't do any of that without the sponsors.
Obviously, Naples Rib Company and Naples Car Wash have to be mentioned at the front and back of everything we do because they hold us down on both sides. McCarty's Jewelry, there for you since 1932, and of course, the Performance Vein Institute of Los Alamitos.
Also, shout out again, Friedman's Appliances, Powerhouse Fitness, and the Long Beach Cyclery. We love our sponsors. We hope that they love us, and we know that we love you. So go ahead and love them. It's a property. It's some sort of mathematical property there.
What did we talk about today? We talked about football referees. Well, we're going to have football here in Long Beach this weekend, like every weekend in the fall. We talked about sports.
Football in Long Beach sounds great.
We talked about sports that you may not have heard about that have a chance to win some CIF rings. Well,
gotta get them rings.
We'll have coverage of cross country and some tennis up there at GazetteSports.com throughout this fall. And of course, we talked about LBCC football, and we'll have the coverage of that game. It will be Saturday at Veterans Memorial Stadium. It's Long Beach. It's sports. It's right here because we are Long Beach Sports. This is GazetteSports.com. For Mike, for Tyler, for JJ.
You're JJ.
For everybody involved at the Gazette newspapers, thank you for listening. Thank you for reading. Thank you for being a part of this community. We'll see you in the stands this weekend. Take care, y'all.
Peace.
Bye, Mike's book.